coming to our senses. As we endeavor to affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, our fourth principle, this month's theme of mindfulness leads us to our first, and I would say the essential source, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Mindfulness is direct experience in the moment, though the experience may not always be as renewing and opening as we would like. As James Baraz puts it, mindfulness is simply being aware of what is happening right now without wishing it were different. Enjoying the pleasant without holding on when it changes, which it will. Being with the unpleasant without fearing it will always be this way, which it won't. Jon Kabat-Zinn, a scientist, writer, meditation teacher, and developer of mindfulness-based stress reduction, wrote the book Coming to Our Senses, Healing Ourselves and Our World Through Mindfulness. While bringing mindfulness fully into the present, he carefully grounds it in the Buddhist tradition in which it arose. The Noble Eightfold Path outlines a systematic approach to the cessation of suffering, the dispelling of ignorance, and thus to liberation. As Kabat-Zinn puts it, mindfulness is one of the eight steps along this path, the one unifying and informing all the others. Altogether, the eight practices are known as wise or right view, wise thinking, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. According to the Buddhist scholar and monk Nyanaponika Thera, mindfulness is the unfailing master key for knowing the mind and is thus the starting point, the perfect tool for shaping the mind and is thus the focal point, and the lofty manifestation of the freedom of the mind and is thus the culminating point. Not bad for something that basically boils down to paying attention. Mindfulness can be thought of as moment-to-moment, non-judgmental awareness, cultivated by paying attention in a specific way, that is, in the present moment, and as non-reactively, and as non-judgmentally, and as open-heartedly as possible. When it is cultivated intentionally, it is sometimes referred to as deliberate mindfulness. When it spontaneously arises, as it tends to do, the more and more and more it is cultivated intentionally, it is sometimes referred to as effortless mindfulness. Ultimately, however arrived at, mindfulness is mindfulness. Of all the meditative wisdom practices that have developed in traditional wisdom cultures throughout the world and throughout history, mindfulness is perhaps the most basic, the most powerful, the most universal, among the easiest to grasp and engage in, and arguably the most sorely needed now. For mindfulness is none other than the capacity we all already have to know what is actually happening as it is happening. Now, a little research lets us know that some people do not have a positive opinion about mindfulness, or that it may be a mixed blessing. David R. Loy writes about the shadow side of mindfulness. Suddenly, the mindfulness movement has become mainstream, making its way into schools, corporations, prisons, and government agencies, including the military. The media now regularly cite scientific studies that report on the numerous health benefits of mindfulness meditation. These are beneficial and promising developments, yet they have a shadow, perhaps most evident in some of the ways that corporate cultures have embraced the practice. Proponents of mindfulness training often ignore or de-emphasize its Buddhist roots. While a stripped-down, secularized approach, sometimes disparaged as McMindfulness, often makes it more palatable to the business world, removing mindfulness from its original liberating and transformative purpose, including its foundation in social ethics, can lose sight of why it is so important. Rather than mindfulness as a means to awaken individuals and organizations from the three poisons that the Buddha identified, the unwholesome roots of greed, ill will, and delusion, it is sometimes refashioned into a technique that can indirectly reinforce these roots. Media portrays mindfulness in terms of stress reduction and attention enhancement. Yet mindfulness is a distinct quality of attention that depends upon the nature of one's thought, speech, and actions, one's way of making a living, and one's efforts to avoid unwholesome and unskillful behaviors, while developing those that are conducive to wise action, social harmony, and compassion. I think it's important to speak a little bit about formal meditation and the importance of mindfulness as explained by Nyanaponikara in his book, The Heart of Buddhist Meditation. He writes that the systematic cultivation of right mindfulness as taught by the Buddha still provides the most simple and direct, the most thorough and effective method for training and developing the mind for its daily tasks and problems, as well as for its highest aim, mind's own unshakable deliverance from greed, hatred, and delusion. Now, the Buddha taught many methods of mental training and meditation, but they all converge on mindfulness. As Tara puts it, the way of mindfulness may therefore rightly be called the heart of Buddhist meditation, or even the heart of the entire doctrine. Now, last month, the reading I shared noted that this web of existence is good and evil, comforting and terrible, a web of life and a web of death. For anyone who wants awakening or liberation from the suffering found in this web of existence, mindfulness and the meditations taught by the Buddha offer a simple and profound path. Now, for most of us, however, I expect that we are looking for something a little more down to earth. Well, let us look further into mindfulness with these words by James Austin. Mindfulness is a kind of remembering to be here, to be present, to pay attention to this moment of life. When we bring awareness to this moment, we know what we are doing and we know we are alive. But we are usually not very mindful. our mind has a mind of its own and easily wanders off into some fantasy of the future or some evaluation, judgment, or remembrance of the past. All this time, we sacrifice what is right in front of us, this present moment. And if we do this kind of thinking repeatedly, our minds become a very busy place to live, running back and forth from past to future, while our experience of the present moment becomes shallow and unfulfilling. When there is too much thinking going on, it's hard to remain open and accepting of our experience. Even when we think we are being present, we are often so attached to thinking itself that we mistake the thoughts we have about the experience for the experiences themselves. As we look more closely at what is going on in our minds, we find that we are often trying to do several things at once, usually thinking ahead to the next thing on the agenda. So the first aspect of mindfulness practice in daily life is just to find ways to remind ourselves to show up in the present moment. At those times when our quality of mindfulness is strong, we tend to have a more spacious mind by being in a deeper and richer way. We connect directly with that inherent self-worth that is our birthright. Now, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh has written extensively about mindfulness in such books as Peace is Every Step, The Path of Mindfulness in Everyday Life. In this book, we find a section called The River of Feelings. In us, there is a river of feelings in which every drop of water is a different feeling, and each feeling relies on all the others for its existence. To observe it, we just sit on the bank of the river and identify each feeling as it surfaces, flows by, and disappears. There are three sorts of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. When we have an unpleasant feeling, we may want to chase it away. But it is more effective to return to our conscious breathing and just observe it, identifying it silently to ourselves. Breathing in, I know there is an unpleasant feeling in me. Breathing out, I know there is an unpleasant feeling in me. Calling a feeling by its name, such as anger, sorrow, joy, or happiness, helps us identify it clearly and recognize it more deeply. We can use our breathing to be in contact with our feelings and accept them. If our breathing is light and calm, a natural result of conscious breathing, our mind and body will slowly become light, calm, and clear, and our feelings also. If we face our unpleasant feelings with care, affection, and nonviolence, we can transform them. By the work of mindful observation, our unpleasant feelings can illuminate so much for us, offering us insight and understanding into ourselves and society. Thich Nhat Hanh. Now, I mentioned earlier John Kabat-Zinn's comment, about deliberate and effortless mindfulness. Sometimes we may have effortless moments when we are totally immersed in whatever is happening. And Thich Nhat Hanh offers us many ways to practice or experience mindfulness in everyday life. I talked about his take on washing dishes with mindfulness in a service I did in November. We can consider eating mindfully, listening mindfully, as we heard in the reading earlier today. There's walking meditation, telephone meditation, driving meditation, and so on. Any moment can be a moment of mindfulness when we remember to be present. Donald Rothberg suggests it is often more difficult to remember to be mindful than to be mindful itself. On the first day of a retreat that I attended some years ago at the Dharma Center of Canada, the teacher suggested that we observe reflected light. Now, that play of light and shadow has been an essential part of my own effortless mindfulness practice since then. And may we all find ways to practice mindfulness and to be mindful in our daily lives. We're going to end this part of the service with a poem by Jon Kabat-Zinn called Tasting Mindfulness. Have you ever had the experience of stopping so completely, of being in your body so completely, of being in your life so completely that what you knew and what you didn't know, that what had been and what was yet to come, and the way things are right now, no longer held even the slightest hint of anxiety or discord? It would be a moment of complete presence, beyond striving, beyond mere acceptance, beyond the desire to escape or fix anything or plunge ahead, a moment of being, a moment of pure being, no longer in time, a moment of pure seeing, pure feeling, a moment in which life simply is. And that isness grabs you by all your senses, by all your memories, by your very genes, by your loves, and welcomes you home. May it be so, and may we help make it so.